The following podcast contains explicit language.
Are these your students, the future entertainers?
Yes, if you don't mind.
Of course, I will speak to them. Hello, children. For those of you with parents who don't own a television, my name is Rogelio de la Vega, and I would like to talk to you about show business.
Rogelio.
It's terrible. One day, you're on top, and the next, they take it away!
All right. New session starts next week.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Aisha Harris, and this is Represent. On today's episode, it's a beautiful day to be a Represent listener, because we've got a treat for you. An interview with none other than Jane the Virgin's Jaime Camille, also known as his character Rogelio de la Vega. Playing Jane's vain, but lovable, soap opera star father, Jaime is one of the best parts of the show. And right before we took a break for the holidays back in December, I had the pleasure of chatting with Jaime about so many things. He got very candid about the lack of award show recognition for Jane the Virgin, Hollywood's reluctance to cast Latinos and tap into the Latino audience, and much more. You won't want to miss it, so check it out. So it is an absolute pleasure to have on today Jaime Camille, who is a star on Jane the Virgin, a show we've talked about on the show quite a few times and we love, and also one of the stars of Coco, which we've also talked about on the show and really, really loved. I cried several times while watching Coco. I've seen it a couple times, so.
No shame, no shame.
did you cry by any chance? Did you, when you saw it?
What? Are you kidding me? I cry like nonstop. And then it's horrible, but when you go... First of all, thank you for having me, Aisha.
Thank you. Thanks
I'm
for
so
coming.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's
my
so great.
Pleasure. So, yeah, so crying with your kids is not, you know, my daughter is 6 years old and my son is 3.
Mm-hmm.
So crying with them is like, Daddy, are you sad? I'm like, no, I'm crying out of happiness. You know, so explaining to them is kind of awkward.
Yeah.
And then when the movie ended and I saw my name on the credits, I'm like, holy, I'm going to be a part of Disney Pixar's catalog, like, for life.
I know.
For eternity. So I cried again, and everybody looked at me like, dude, movie's over. I
mean,
what's wrong with you? You know, there's nothing. Yeah, you don't understand. This was my name, you know. But but it was very nice. It was a very nice
movie. Oh, that's
movie.
So great. That's so great. So first, I want to talk about Jane the Virgin. I know you've talked about how you, when you first got the script for it, Jenny Snyder Erdmann, who is the creator of the show, you talked with her about where your character was going, because in the first episode, I think your character Rogelio only says like five words, or it doesn't really say much.
No, it wasn't the Hollywood stupidity about, you know, how many pages do I have or how many lines. I mean, this is, you know, it was not about that, of course. It was just about, you know, where is this character going? Because, well, many things to tell you about that. First of all, I got very lucky because I've been doing the audition process in Los Angeles for, you know, the 10 years or something. And, you know, I think acting has to be the most rejected profession in the world,
mm-hmm.
without a doubt. I mean, you know, you receive no's every single day. So you have to grow a very thick skin and a very strong heart
right.
when you're an actor, because you're always rejected. And then, so I was doing the auditions, of course, nailing zero jobs. And then I'm in Mexico doing a project, and my manager calls and I listen, you have 3 direct offers. And I'm like, oh, cool. When do I audition? And he was like, no, numbnuts. It's direct. And I'm like, what is a direct? I didn't even know what the concept of direct offer mean, right? I'm like, okay, so yeah. So we have 3 scripts, and one for ABC, one for Netflix, and then Jane the Virgin. And without a doubt, the most creative and beautiful project of them all was Jane the Virgin. The script was just brilliant. So we read it, but you know, we did a Skype conference with Brad Silverling and Jenny Erman. And of course, in a very Rogelio de la Vega mode, I was doing a project in Mexico, and I lit my dressing room. Like, I asked the lighting guys to put like lights on the dressing room because I wanted to look good in the Skype conference with Jenny, right? And then, but the point that I'm trying to make is that we don't know up to this date, we are not kept in the circle of trust, in Jenny Erman's circle of trust.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know what's going to happen. Like, it's not like they lay out the character for you like way in advance, or you know where you're going in the future.
Right.
You just don't. Like, we found out who Sin Rostro was at the table read. We were like, oh my God, it's Bridget Rieck. Oh my God, Bridget is Sin Rostro. I cannot believe it. So of course, now we know that. But at the time, we didn't. So I talked to Jenny. I'm like, hey, what's going to happen with this character? And, you know, she kind of explained to me what was going on, but not thoroughly. But regardless of if a character was going somewhere or not, the show was so creative and so, I mean, so beautiful that, of course, that was the choice.
Yeah.
The obvious choice.
I mean, can you talk about or recall the first time you really felt as though you got into the groove of the character of Rogelio, like when you really felt like you were connecting with his character?
I think it happened probably episode 2 or episode 3 when the leopard escapes from Santos' set from the novella.
Mm-hmm.
We have a leopard in the loose, you know, and everybody starts running. And I said, you know what, I'm going to go for it. I mean, worst case scenario is, dude, bring it down a notch and don't go there because no. And I just jumped from the boat and started doing this like crazy physical comedy, like, oh my God, a leopard. And everybody was laughing and everything. And nobody stopped me. And I'm like, okay, well, this is good. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go there, right? but that's like when I knew that Rogelio was kind of like the comic relief of the show and everything. But of course, when you do a comedic character, you don't want to be that superficial, and you don't want to be that person that only throws pies at people's faces and that's it.
Right.
You need some depth, because if you don't have it, then the character becomes boring and people is like, okay, again the funny guy. Mm-hmm. Let's see if he pours milk on himself this time, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have any purpose. And to enjoy the comedy of any character, you have to also dig deep into the character's heart or soul. Otherwise, you don't enjoy his or her comedy, right? So I love the fact that Rogelio is a very well-written character and very well-balanced. So you can laugh with him, or whenever he has like heartfelt scenes with Jane or Xiomara, you also feel with him. And I think I'm very grateful to Jenny and her amazing team of writers, because they make Rogelio a very well-rounded character.
Yes. I mean, it's not like, you know, in the 90s, all the sort of comic relief characters or the very silly characters had catchphrases and whatnot. And I mean, you have obviously, you have your way of speaking and your different philosophies and all these things. But I totally get the fact that you are very much a well-rounded character. All the characters on the show are. And one of the things you've been dealing with this season, and that really stuck out to me, was the episode in which you were sort of confronting aging as a character. And
yeah.
Not you, but Rogelio. But
oh, no, me too. No, make no mistake about it. I mean, everybody eventually.
Well, I actually did kind of want to ask, like, how did you tap into that character? Is that something that you've also, because we all often talk about Hollywood, women are often confronted with aging and the prospects of aging and being aged out of characters. But I mean, I imagine that there is some sort of level of that for men too, especially in the telenovela world, where you have to be exceedingly handsome and gorgeous and young looking at all times.
Well, in women especially, I think Hollywood is very unfair to women. And I am the number one feminist, because first, I love my wife and she happens to be a woman. And I also love my daughter and she also happens to be a woman. So I respect women and love women so much. I think Hollywood is extremely unfair to them, like you say, aging and many other issues that women go through in Hollywood. I think it's just wrong. But I think, as you very well said, I think for men, I don't know, it's so unfair. It's so stupid. You age and, oh, he's so interesting. He looks, and then she's no longer good for camera. It's like, what are you saying? What does that even mean? It's just, I don't know. There are so many things that are so unfair. And I speak from my heart, from my daughter, Elena, which I want her to be an amazing, whatever the hell she wants to be, a scientist, whatever, you know. It's just very, very frustrating to see how women are treated generally in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. Between Hollywood and you also come from the Mexican TV world, and you did La Fea Bella, which was mm-hmm. Ugly Betty in Mexico, the Mexican version of that show. And, you know, do you see a difference between the way in which women are treated there versus here in the States, or are there things that are pretty similar?
No, well, things are pretty similar, but I think in probably Latin American cultures are a little worse, just because the culture of Latin American men, it's just hideous, and how they treat or downgrade women. I don't know why. I was never, I mean, you know, my parents did a very good job with me, thank God, and I respect and value the humankind, you know, but yeah, in Latin America, unfortunately, downgrading of women or abuse to women, it's might probably be a little worse than mm-hmm. in the U.S. And I don't know, to be honest, because I'm not from here. I don't know. Am I making sense?
No, I can see that. I do wonder if maybe like the way in which these things manifest themselves are differently.
Yeah.
Are different.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, now, fortunately, we hear the cases in the U.S. That's impressive and that's amazing. I don't know that if that's ever going to happen in a Latin American country, but... Mm-hmm. Hopefully it will.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I like about Rogelio is that he's such a sort of progressive character, especially a progressive male character. One of the storylines, which also connects to the storyline with you kind of confronting aging, was Zoe wanted you to get a vasectomy. So they didn't have to keep pulling out. But like, I thought these are the types of things.
Why is Jane so graphic, for the love of God?
It's so graphic, but it's honestly,
I was watching
so
that character with my daughter, and I'm like, okay, Disney Junior, I like it. Because then, you know, they're in that age when they start to ask a lot of questions, and
right.
I try to answer everything to my daughter. I want my daughter to know that whatever problem, issue, question she might have, I am the guy to go to, right? No matter how awkward it is or how difficult it is to explain, right? Or how young she is to listen to facts.
Mm-hmm.
But I want her to know that daddy's always there for her, right? But there are some things and you're like, okay, this can wait a little longer.
Yeah. She doesn't have to see that episode yet.
Exactly.
But you know, I think that seeing them confront this, birth control and having to deal with these things, and Rogelio just being a very, even though in some ways, in America at least, we'd consider them, like his gestures can be effeminate sometimes, he's still very much like, he basically has to deal with sometimes his confronting what it means to be a man and what masculinity can look like in, you know, the present day. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just wondering, have you ever had a chance to play a character like this before?
Well, yeah. You mean like relating to? Yeah, of course. Well, mm-hmm. maybe I did a project in Mexico called Por Ella Soy Eva, Because of Her I'm Eva, or On Eva's Heels.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very much in the line of Tootsie or Mrs. Doubtfire, if you can imagine me as a woman. and it was brilliant. It was a beautiful project where this guy is a horrible misogynist and he hates women, and women are only, you know, they're only there to please men. That's it. That's why God created women.
Mm-hmm.
This character, right? And then, you know, he works in a very successful professional environment, and whenever he receives projects, you know, written or developed by women, he just throws them to the trash because it was written by a woman. I mean, it can't be good, right? I mean, this guy, it's horrible, pathetic, ridiculous guy. And then, you know, whatever, in the novella style, he dies, but he doesn't die. And the only way to come back to redeem himself is he tries to come back as an old man, and he almost gets caught, and then like a janitor, and so he's like, you have to, dude. So he connects with a makeup artist, and he's like, you have to go back as a woman. And I'm like, I will never, for the love of God, I will never wear heels in my life. You know, cut to, and you know, they're waxing him and getting him ready to play like a character, kind of like Mrs. Doubtfire kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in that process, this character realizes, of course, the awakening of how unfair women are treated, and he's, you know, called out on the street and called horrible names and slapped, you know, on the butt, and starts to realize how important it is to respect and honor a woman. And it's a beautiful, beautiful project that plays homage and really elevates women.
Yeah. Is that a film? I know you do stage work as well. Was that a movie project or a TV project?
That was a sitcom. Yeah.
Okay.
In Mexico, the concept of a sitcom doesn't exist because even though I've done way more comedy than the classic novelas, the why haven't you called me Aisha? And then the camera stays in you for 45 seconds and nobody breathes and you're like, dude, what the, this is not real life. I did maybe one or two of those at the very beginning of my career. And I'm like, this doesn't feel natural. Who acts like this? This is just horrible, right? And then I started doing comedy, situational comedy. But, you know, in Mexico, you go on the air from Monday to Friday in a one-hour format. So, of course, that's immediately labeled as a novela. It's mm-hmm. not because sitcoms are one. They're once a week or whatever, right? So, but I do more sitcoms than classic telenovelas. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, we'll make sure that people who are listening, if they want to check that out, they can try and find it online.
It sounds really cool. Yes, lleva. It's very cool. Yeah.
So one of the things that struck me in an interview you did a couple of years ago was that you mentioned the fact that Univision has millions more viewers than, you know, most of the major American networks combined, yeah. whether it's ABC, CBS. And yet somehow Univision and its influence and even just the Latino community in general tends to be ignored in the mainstream. I even mm-hmm. look at the fact that like it took this long for Disney Pixar to make a film in which the characters are Latino and they're, you know, the majority of the cast is voiced by Latino actors.
Yeah.
And it does seem to me like there is this sort of divide of between Latin culture and American culture, even though there's so many here now and here in the States. And apparently the projections are that by 2020, the majority of children will be Latino children.
Correct.
So I'm curious, what do you think it will take for Latin culture to make its way into the mainstream on screen?
Wow, are you ready? Do we have 3 days to talk about this? No.
Oh, we have forever.
Okay, cool. No, I think, yeah, this minority, quote unquote, it's the economic engine of this country, basically. So, it's ridiculous. Right now, Gina Rodriguez and everybody at the show, we were outraged about the fact that SAG-AFTRA and other award shows didn't nominate one single Latino in their shows. It is not that we want to get awards for free.
Yeah.
But, the poor Latinos, throw at them a little bone, you know, throw them a little award just for them not to feel ignored. No, fuck you. It's not about that. It's really? Do you think Gina Rodriguez doesn't deserve a nomination? I mean, she won the Golden Globe, for the love of God.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think she should not be nominated for a SAG-AFTRA award or for a Critics' Choice or whatever? It's like ridiculous. And then don't tell me Jane the Virgin, Modern Family, again, for the 12th year, same nominations.
I know.
Really? Can't we move on? Can we look to the other amazing shows that are being created, like One Day at a Time with Justina Machado?
Yes.
It's ridiculous. It's absurd. And this, I am progressive. I am from the left. I'm probably, if I would have to choose a political party, I will be a Democrat, definitely. But the only thing that I tend to agree with the right, if there's one thing you can agree with people that live in an alternative reality, is that, you know, whenever Hollywood, we're so righteous about it. So like, oh my God, yeah, because inclusiveness and whatever and diversity and love everybody, love the humankind. And then you turn around and like, excuse me, Oscars, how many African-American women have you awarded in the past 50 years? Can you count them with the fingers of one hand? And you probably have fingers left. So it's like, come on. Yes, we talk the talk, but we don't walk the walk,
mm-hmm.
It's really frustrating because it's not that, again, we don't want awards for free whatever. And I can't complain as a Mexican because we have dominated the Academy Awards for the past 2 or 3 years. Best director, best film, best cinematographer. It's like we've done well. We've done well,
but also just Mexican male directors, you know, like, yes, Alfonso Cuarón. Don't know.
Emmanuel Lubezki, Alejandro González Iñárritu.
Right. But really,
you have Patricia Riggen, for example. Patricia Riggen is an amazing director.
Mm-hmm.
She's a very gifted director. But again, you know, you should be awarded if you do a good job, not because you're demographic or if you're a minority. I don't agree with that also. You have to be awarded if you deserve it.
Yeah.
But I truly believe that there are many shows out there and many performers out there beyond talented performers that deserve a nomination and deserve to win.
Right.
What you were saying, it's incredible. I was rooting for a movie and the character, my mother is Brazilian, my father is Mexican, so I'm half Brazilian, half Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
And I was rooting for this movie where it was going to be shot either in Brazil or in Ecuador or Dominican Republic or something. And I asked the head of this studio, the head of the international department of a major studio in Hollywood. I asked this person, is the movie going to be shot in Ecuador or Brazil? Because it was a legitimate question, because if it was in Brazil, you know, I could speak the language and I can throw some Portuguese at it. And, you know, Brazil is a humongous country.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of fans there that will, you know, whatever. It was, you know. And the official answer from the head of the international department was, who cares? Or what's the difference? And I'm like, what do you mean, what's the difference? Brazil is the only country that doesn't speak Spanish. It speaks Portuguese, and it's so alienated. They have their own Grammys. I mean, their own Grammys, their own award shows. I mean, if the head of the international department doesn't know the difference between Brazil and the other Latin American countries, somebody in HR really fucked up at putting this person there.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, you shouldn't be here. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, there's a lot of ignorance. The reality is there's a lot of ignorance. And like you said, our finales, you know, our show finales sometimes beat CBS, Fox, ABC, NBC combined when it comes to ratings on our novelas finales. Mm-hmm. Telemundo is doing an amazing job with their narco culture novelas, which I'm on the fence on that, because you shouldn't. You shouldn't glorify the narco culture, right?
Mm.
But it's like doing Goodfellas and saying, oh, you shouldn't glorify the gangsters. Like, you know, it's a movie. It's a make-believe. So everybody chill, right?
Yeah.
But it's doing amazing and good ratings and everything. So I also had a conversation with a very lovely guy from Lionsgate, and he's like, I'm like, dude, it's not about, you shouldn't watch Univision or Telemundo or speak the language to know who to cast in your next project. If you want to hit or tap into the Latino market, it's very easy. You just ask your people to give you the statistics numbers of the last shows that aired on Univision or Telemundo and the ratings they have. You will see that they beat every single mainstream network, right? And then out of these seven shows or whatever, you will have 15 or 20 actors that already are household names within the Latino community, with the 50 million Latinos living in this country. So you see who of them, they know how to act, and, mm-hmm. and which of them don't act like this, you know? And then those guys, you ask if they speak English or not. And let's say you have 8. Well, if you want to tap immediately and see box office hits and ratings be impacted by this, hire the Latinos that are also loved, they are already loved by these 50 million Latinos living in this country.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that major studios or networks, they have their West Coast offices, they're in LA, and their East Coast offices, they're in New York. And in New York, you have a big density of Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, and we're all brothers and sisters. But the reality is that 85% of our minority are from Mexico, and that's just a reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in the East Coast and you have a big density of Dominicans or Puerto Ricans, when you call for a Latino audition, most probably you're going to get a Dominican or a Puerto Rican or somebody from the Caribbean, because that's, you know, they live there in New York. And then, you know, when the movie opens, they might go like, I thought this person was going to draw more tickets. And no, in fact, they did. You know, the whole 2% of the minority that represents that country went to the movies and they watched the movies. Now, this is a very sensitive subject, because I'm not saying, you know, Mexicans or Puerto Ricans or Dominicans are better than the other ones. The other problem we have with the Latin American communities is that we don't come together as one. And this doesn't happen with the African American community. Like, they really support each other immensely. And unfortunately, the Latin American community doesn't support each other. They draw lines between Colombians, Venezuelans, Nicaraguans, Ecuadorians, Mexicans, and that's wrong. We should be united more.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing?
I talked about a lot of things, but I probably didn't make one single point, right?
No, you made a lot of points, and they all answered.
Oh, my dear God.
They all answered my question to some extent. As a black person, I will say that to some extent, it's funny, because I've interviewed a few people who are from different communities, whether they are from the Latino community or from the Asian community. And yeah. One thing they often say is that we don't come together enough like the African-American community does. And I think...
Do you think your community comes together, or we are completely... Or we are under that perception, and it's not true?
I think that... We definitely do come together to some extent, but it's not all roses. I think there is some. If you recall earlier this year when Get Out came out, the movie directed by Jordan Peele, Samuel L. Jackson came out and said, well, why did they hire a black British person to play the lead role? Like, he couldn't possibly connect with this character in the way that a person born in America could do. And I feel like that critique...
I don't agree with that because you're an actor. So
right.
As an actor, you... Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that's just an example of how there is... It's not always perfect. I can also understand the Latino community, I think, has perhaps maybe many more differing experiences than the mm-hmm. black community might have. If you live in the United States, you might have more similar experiences, regardless of whether you come from the Caribbean or from Africa or you're born here. But yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's hard to tell. Yeah. I think we all, every group has its infighting or its tensions.
Totally.
But I can totally understand also your point about where these castings are happening. And I think to Americans, especially like Americans who are not Latino, you know, the people making these decisions think we can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, if a Mexican actor is playing a Venezuelan character, like, no one's going to know the difference.
No, and totally. And sorry to interrupt, but also the other point that I was trying to make, you know, I was trying to make a point that if you want to hire somebody that is already well-known. But at the same time, again, it opens a lot of debate because it's like, yeah, okay, you're well-known, but you should get the job because of your talent,
mm-hmm.
regardless of if you're famous or not famous, or you have a following or not a following, or if you're an actor that just you're coming from nothing,
right?
So it's just, you know, it's a very debatable thing, and it obviously opens up a very interesting and very lengthy conversation
mm-hmm.
about this, right? It's not like black or white.
Right. Do you see the tide changing? Because as you said earlier, you went about 10 years trying to audition in the States and finally wound up with the plethora. You had three different roles to choose from. But like, it seems like 10 years ago, there wasn't this desire. There wasn't as much of a desire as there is now for Latino stories.
And it was a lot of, yeah, I agree. I mean, and it was also, there was a lot of ignorance, and there still is a lot of ignorance between of what we represent. But like you were saying, like the head of studios or whatever, they don't understand the difference between Mexican. Well, to them, if you look like their gardener, you can play Latino. Simple as that. It's very easy. You know, it's as simple as that. And it's really sad. And it's like me being a Mexican and wanting to do a movie, right? And I'm like, okay, let's do an American movie with an American actor. I would like to hire either Johnny Depp or Carrot Top. They will go like, what? Excuse me? And you're like, well, yeah, I mean, they're both Americans, right? And they both do films. What's the difference? I mean, right?
Yeah.
They both have American passports and they both do films. What's the difference? Like, dude, really? So, yeah, it should be definitely more education when it comes to our culture, how we look like, how tall we are, how our complexion is, and because we have, you know, all size and shapes.
Yeah, yeah. I know you're also just very proud to be from Mexico, and I've followed your Twitter. Your Twitter is all about how much you love Mexico, and you were donating to the Mexico Earthquake Relief Fund. And I'm just curious, especially at a time now where the fear of what's happening with Trump in the White House, with immigrants and the way in which they are treating immigrants, especially Latino immigrants.
Yeah.
What does it mean to you right now to be a proud Mexican?
Well, you always have to be very proud of your roots, and regardless if you agree with the politics of the country or if you think that that your own community could work on their issues, right, and be better individuals, but you have to be proud of where you're coming from. And this thing that you're mentioning, the Earthquake Relief Fund, I'm going to put this out there even for the States, because it was a brilliant hashtag created by YouTubers and influencers in Mexico called 60 Days with Mexico. And it was brilliant because, you know, sometimes the natural disasters, they last in people's mind for whatever time they last in the media.
Right.
So if the media can milk the same image of the same building collapsing over and over and over again, you know, for 3 days until something ridiculous happened, or, you know, the administration pardons Sheriff Arpaio, and then, you know, the attention flips. As you know, it takes a lot of time to rebuild emotionally and materially a country that has been devastated by natural disasters. So 60 days with Mexico, it was great. It was amazing. It was just commit for 60 days to give something, a can of tuna, a bag of diapers, formula, food, money, whatever it is. But for 60 days, tweet about it, tag somebody that is not already on this boat, and you do like a pay it forward kind of thing that never ends.
And if anyone is looking up the 60 Days with Mexico hashtag, it's mostly being shared in Spanish as hashtag 60 Días con México.
Yes, perfect. 60 Días con México. Yes. But I don't know. I think I would like to think that this country is way greater than one individual or a particular party or you know, way of thinking or I mean, I just I would like to believe in America more than I believe in one individual that sits in the Oval Office or a group of individuals that sit on the Senate or whatever. You know when you move a pinball machine and it goes tilt?
Mm-hmm.
And my brain goes like that when I try in a very lovely and open-hearted way to understand where the conservative mind or the far right way of thinking, where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
I swear to you, Aisha, I don't understand. I truly don't understand. I truly, truly don't understand why the hate and why the intolerance and why this alternative reality. I don't get it. Maybe you can. And also, I'm not from here, so maybe that's a reason I don't quite get it.
Yeah.
But I do believe in kindness. I believe in the human race. I believe in kindness. I believe in, if somebody doesn't understand you, don't fight. It doesn't work. It will not work, because when you fight with somebody that it's either right or left, Democrat or Republican, whatever. When you're trying to fight with ignorance, they will defend their point with all the confidence that only ignorance can give them. So, yeah, there's no way to go. But if you hug somebody and you open your heart and you try to speak to people in a lovable and understanding way, and hearing and then you make your point with love, and then you hear their point or whatever, I think you get through more than trying to be a smarty pants or I don't know. It's just I'm mm-hmm. I should say that I'm going through a lot now in my heart, because my daughter is having a little, like, nothing serious, thank God, or anything, but it's like a little febrile seizure. So, of course, I'm a little more sensitive to things right now. So this podcast is going to be a very interesting, when I hear it back, I'm going to say, I cannot believe I was saying these things. I'm sorry, Aisha.
Oh, no, but, I'm sorry to hear about your daughter.
thank you. But I don't know, I'm becoming a little bit more sensitive. As you grow older, I'm 44 years old, and as you grow older, you become more shameless and you become less politically correct and oh my God, am I going to say this? What, oh my God, the media, how you start not to care.
Yeah.
And you just start to speak your mind, and I think that might be a good thing.
Yeah. I have to say, that's one of the things I very much look forward to when I get old, is because I know so many older people in my life who just say whatever they want, and I'm like, I wish I could be that carefree right now. I'm not there yet, but I'm making my way. So I appreciate.
But it's a very fine line, right? To be, because you can speak your mind, but you also have to be thoughtful.
Right. I mean, also some of the people who are older and speak their mind turn out to be like the racist grandmas of the world. So like, there's that too.
Exactly. Exactly.
Abuelita runs our house just like Mama Imelda did.
No music! No music!
Aunque la vida...
No music!
I think we're the only family in Mexico who hates music. And my family's fine with that. But me?
Be back by lunch, mijo.
Love you, mama. I am not like the rest of my family.
Hola, Miguel.
Hola.
Speaking of your kids, you know, what was it like to have them watch Coco? Because I'm assuming that they can't see Jane the Virgin yet, but they've watched Coco. Yeah. Yeah.
They watched Coco, and I did a couple of, you know, I have a recurring role in Elena of Avalor, and I did something in Secret Life of Pets, and I'm doing a voice in DuckTales, and, you know, I work a lot with Disney, and I love them. I'm totally a Disney child, 100%, and they loved it. I mean, it was, they haven't seen it. We went to the premiere, and the premiere was kind of late, so it was a little past their bedtime. So I'm waiting to take them back to the theater at a more, like, at a better time for them, mm-hmm. not to fall asleep or be, like, a little tired or whatever, because they couldn't watch, they couldn't stay till the end. Mm-hmm. They were very, very tired, so we had to leave. Mm. But I'm going to take them back to a more normal time or wait till the movie comes out on, you know, iTunes or whatever, and then I'm going to, but they loved it. I mean, they loved it. And, you know, for kids, it takes them a while to watch an animated film. They have to watch it like two or three times mm-hmm. to get into the story and really understand what's going on. So, you know, the first time, movie theater, overwhelming pictures, photographs, you know, it was like, what is it? But then when you see it in a different environment, it's a little better for them.
Yeah. Do you think, are they aware at all of the concept of, they're very young, I know, but the concept of mm-hmm. representation, or do you feel as though they have something they can sort of see themselves in besides Coco as kids?
I think they shouldn't have. I think this new generation, hopefully, and of course we have very bad parenting out there, but hopefully this new generation or my kids' generation won't have to worry about representation, because the humankind will be represented. You know, I was very proud of my daughter. I was doing Chicago on Broadway last year. I was playing Billy Flynn, and I took my daughter to the Children's Museum or something. And there were and NYU was running a study about how prejudice or how the kids see like colors or shapes or forms in people. And they said, well, do you mind if we use your daughter? It was like and my wife was like, yeah, sure, whatever, use her. And let's say if you got a 10 in the score, you are a bigoted, you know, racist, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And if you got a 0, that means that you can have in front of you a person that his skin color is green, black, yellow, brown, and to you, or big, small, and to you, that's just a person. That has nothing to do with the fact that this is a person, right? And my daughter scored like -1 or something like that. So I was very, very proud, because that means that my wife and I, we are hopefully doing a good job in and hopefully all the parents out there, which maybe not, but I'm hopeful that this generation won't have to worry about representation and won't have to worry about if you're a diversity or if he's not diverse or if you're a minority or not, because there will be love, and there will be tolerance, and there will be inclusiveness for the humankind, not for a certain diversity or not for a certain minority group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm also just hoping to see more. I mean, Jane the Virgin is one show, and I love it, obviously, but one show can only do so much. And I think, hopefully, I know Gina Rodriguez is also has a few projects in the works that she's planning to produce. Yeah. And I'm just very much looking forward to that, because I think more than anything, the more different representation we have, the less, like you were talking about Narcos earlier, Narcos can still exist, but it won't be the only one or the main one that everyone thinks of when they think of Latinos.
Have you seen This Is Us? The show?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I haven't. I'm dying to see it, because I was hosting the SAG-AFTRA convention. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, whenever they need diversity or they want to invite you to prove to the world they're diverse, then they invite you and you're there. But when it comes to the real awards that go out on television, you're not really needed, right? Only when they, oh, this is the diverse, let's do a diversity party. Have all the blacks and the Latinos and the Asians. Hey, yeah, they can come so the press can see how diverse we are. But when it comes to the awards, not Latino, you know?
Yeah.
But we were there and I saw a little trailer. And from what I saw from the show, that I'm dying to start watching it, it's so beautifully diverse.
Yeah.
It talks about so many different lifestyles. It was in skin colors and everything. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I haven't seen the second season yet, but I did watch the first season. I feel like it's a show you will definitely like. It's very cheesy and in many ways, but it's also very very well acted, and just you said, does tell a lot of different stories in different ways. So, yeah.
Awesome.
So my last question for you, which is the question I ask all of my guests, is what is the last thing you saw on film or TV in which you felt represented, you saw yourself, and not as Rogelio or anything else you're involved in?
I would have to say that's a very difficult question to ask. I if you allow me to break the rules, I will have to say Coco. I know I'm not supposed to, but... But to be honest, I cannot think like, and of course I'm a dad, so you know, I haven't been to the movies in many years, and my wife and I wouldn't do it like the nanny culture, so we are very hands-on parents. So when you're a hands-on parent, your social life dies pretty much. That's how it goes. So so I haven't watched many shows, and I haven't been to the movies a lot, but I would have to say listen, future guests, do not break this rule, okay?
Only Jaime can break this rule.
And I'm going to tell you why, Coco, because I really respect Lee Unkrich and Adrian Molina, the directors, because the research, how they went into the Mexican culture and how they represented Mexico in such a true-to-fact and such a legitimate way, I have never, ever seen something like that in a movie or TV project, animated or not. Just it was overwhelming. It was so beautiful. It was so nice. And to be honest, I cannot think of another project that I felt so identified with.
Hey, I mean, that's an answer. That in itself says a lot about representation and how it shakes out. So we'll allow it.
Because, you know, Latinos, unfortunately, they have to be, they just came out of jail. They are their gardeners. They speak like, ese vato. It's like, no, we are not. There are a lot of stories to tell about our culture.
Well, oh, wait, there was one last question I wanted to ask you. It'll be very quick, but I have to ask you before we go.
Of course.
Which is, based on the mid-season finale, it seems like, of Jane the Virgin, it seems like Rogelio might be Team Raphael now. Is Rogelio Team Raphael? Or do you think he will be?
Well, for obvious reason, he cannot be Team Michael, right?
I mean, well, spoiler.
He is no longer with us, so it's like either... No, but I think, yes, he will be eventually Team Raphael. Of course, he sees Raphael as when he was young, right?
Yeah.
Of course, Raphael being way less good-looking than Rogelio and having been with way less women, of course. but because he sees a little of himself in Raphael, then he's a little hesitant about, you know, giving the blessing for Raphael to be with his daughter, obviously. But eventually, Raphael, as you can see, is changing. He's becoming more a family man. He's hitting on him that he's a dad, whatever. And of course, I believe, even though, you know, Michael was the safe choice or the obvious choice for Jane, destiny or fate might be more in Jane and Raphael's side than with Michael. So yes, of course, you know, as a father, I don't know, Rogelio, but as a father, I can tell you that you will love and embrace anything that your kids love or do or accept in their life. So I think Rogelio is pretty much a family man, and he loves family, and he will always be on his family side. So yeah, he will, whatever makes Jane happy, Rogelio will be happy with that.
Wonderful answer. Well, thank you so much, Jaime. It was an absolute pleasure talking with you.
Same here, Aisha. Thank you so much.
That's a wrap. Jane the Virgin Season 4 is currently airing on Fridays at 9 on the CW, and you'll find links to everything we discussed on our show page. Represent is produced by the lovely, awesome Berlin Williams. Our excellent social media assistant is Marissa Martinelli. And our intro-outro music is performed by the sweet San Francisco funk soul band Midtown Social. And stay tuned for our upcoming episodes in which we get hyped about the release of Black Panther in a few different and very special ways. Until next time.